Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard our back-to-school special. Hi, I'm Foster Brown with you. We have the Internet Advisor on the way. And we've got a great program lined up for you. For those of you who may be wondering what laptop, what printer, whatever you may want to outfit your student with or somebody in your family, you've got the right place to be. Rick Breida, the Gadget Guy, is in studio with us, along with Gary Baker, Cal Carson, and myself, Foster Brown. So stay tuned. Got a great show lined up for you here on the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, and the gang is in the house, and they're already going at one another, even the new guy. We're teasing around here. We have the typical Windows-Apple debate that goes on in the studios here, kind of teasing back and forth, especially since I had to reboot my Mac in order to be able to get the network. In any case, Gary Baker is in studio here with us, as always. Gary, good to have you here.
PC, iPhone, iPad, I'm confused.
We all got the devices. To be honest with you, we're all carrying all sorts of devices now. Cal Carson, the other one of the protagonists in this conversation.
All over the road like gravy on top of mashed potatoes. But I can tell you right now, this is probably going to go on for the rest of eternity.
I think it is.
And Cal, you're AC/DC also. You know, you're a Mac and a PC guy. You can fix PCs as easily as you can fix Macs, and you have more practice in it.
Well, I fix PCs because I want to make money freelance every now and then. But when I want to be creative, there's nothing better than a Mac.
There you go. Okay. There you go. Now, we got to bring I see our newcomer in this, but Rick Breida's with us. He's a CNET columnist, the Cheapskate there, among other things, lots of other
he
ones.
He writes the Cheapskate blog. We haven't established for sure that he's a Cheapskate.
I think he is. I think from everything I've seen, I think he has the credentials.
I think we need to ask him directly.
Is that why he squeaks?
Beg pardon? Go ahead.
I live the cheapskate lifestyle.
That was easy for you to
absolutely.
Say.
Absolutely.
There he goes. But well, good to have you in here, too, Rick.
Thank
Rick
you.
Is our gadget guy, and he joined us in the summer of 2012 to help us on a monthly basis coming in and talking about gadgets. You do a lot of hands-on with gadgets. I see an Apple logo on the back of whatever you've got there. Oh, that happens to be an iPad.
Hey, I want to know, did rebooting your Mac, did that fix the problem?
I don't know. I'm still working on it.
I didn't know Macs had to be rebooted ever. I thought they were just perfect 24/7.
So the impression is boot it up once and never boot it again?
That's what I hear.
I do that with mine. I can't tell you the last time I've turned my computer off.
Booting cleans it up every now and then.
That just closes the laptop.
That's because you're an executive, and that's typical of what they do.
Well, I don't do real work. Is that what you're saying?
My job. I can't comment in that area.
Well, Rick, it's good to see you fit right in here with the conversation.
He does have an iPad.
I know. That's what I said.
I mean, does this mean you have to give up writing the Cheapskate blog?
Not that. No, I've actually written about some cheap deals on the iPad.
Perhaps he bought it refurbished.
Maybe. You never know. Yeah.
But, I know. Well, you've told us also about other devices you had before. Matter of fact, one of the first shows you were on, you were talking about a refurbished Color Nook, I think, that you had rooted and you were using as a full...
As an Android tablet.
Like an Android tablet.
Right, exactly. You know, this is my one kowtowing to Apple, where I have the iPhone and the iPad, but you would not catch me on a Mac.
Sometime we're going to have to talk about just this whole business of the universes that are being created now for these devices to work within. I'm thinking like the Apple world, the Windows world, and to a certain extent the Google world with Android as well. We're finding this happen more often. But
And most of it doesn't matter anymore because we're doing more and more online, in the cloud, and... Yeah.
I tell you where I think it's really becoming even more of a problem, though.
Okay, tell me.
I'll tell you later on. I don't want to get into that right now, but because we want to talk about something that a lot of our every
program we've had so far, we get a call of somebody saying, how do I buy a laptop? How do I buy this and that? It's back to school time. I just saw a sales figure, by the way, Rick, that said, I think that behind the holiday times, this is one of the biggest electronic buying times of the year. Outside of like Black Friday or something like that, which is that time after Thanksgiving and before Christmas. It's a huge time for buying. So today you're going to weigh in, and you got a lot of stuff lined up for us on some of the devices that are out there. Just give people a little bit of a flavor of some of the things we're going to look at.
Well, sure. Obviously, this is a big shopping time of year because it's back to school. And for kids heading off to college, heading off to high school, and even heading off to middle school, they're going to need a laptop at the very least. They're going to need perhaps a printer. They're going to need some flash drives. They might need a new phone if they're going off to college. There's all kinds of gear out there that goes with being a student these days. And so we'll take a look at some of some of the best deals you can get. Talk about whether you need to spend a little or a lot, and we'll get it all.
And as a matter of fact, you've got a special deal this week. And to live up to your name as the Cheapskate, the Cheapskate blog that you write, you've also got a very special deal for us on a phone we're going to be talking about. And Cal came up with a great Internet Advisor takeaway that we're also going to be looking at. By the way, folks, the information, the links to a lot of this information, including a whole bunch of things, are on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. And we got lots of goodies out there for you, including some of the guides that Rick has. There'll be links off to things there as well. Just quickly, guys, which news item this week caught your attention the most? And there were a ton of them out there. Did anybody watch the landing of Curiosity? I'm curious.
Did not stay up late for that.
Didn't stay up?
Didn't I didn't catch? Watch the landing, but I have been looking at the pictures that they've been broadcasting back.
Yeah, I didn't see it live, but I saw it after the fact, right? Because you can go to YouTube, it's, you know.
Yeah, now it's, yeah. Because I remember as a kid getting up. Now, I can shift back a little further. I was there when some of the original launches of, the Apollo moon rockets and things like that were going off. And I would literally, I heard somebody commenting
I
on
thought
a podcast.
You were going to tell us you saw the landing of Moses after the flood.
Not quite that far back.
He said launching, so I thought he was going to say like the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
You guys are bad. You're just plain bad to the bone. Anyway, I remember being there for, as a matter of fact, one guy in a blog was, a podcast was talking about staying home from school and watching these things. You just watch it with incredible.
Oh, you didn't even have to stay home from school. You'd actually be in school. They'd roll the TV into the classroom.
That also yes, as it went on, that was exactly true. It was a real public event. But now we can watch them later on. You can catch the pictures later on. So, and it's been a remarkable event. The software and the machinery that went into it are incredible. Much less powerful than most of our computers, even phones, but hardened so they can work in that environment. Incredible. Coming back in just a minute with Rick Broida, our Back to School Gadget Special, Part 1. Well, we certify we have a rowdy crew in the studios today. We're Gary Baker, Cal Carson, Rick Broida, the gadget guy, and myself, Foster Brown. But Rick, we're going to hand the reins over to you because today is a very special program. It's the Back to School Gadget Special, and you being the gadget guy, and also having a corner on a real keen eye towards the budget. Let's start talking about some of the things that parents or students might be looking for as they're heading back.
Sure. Well, obviously, the first priority, I think, for most students and most parents is going to be a laptop. And it's very difficult these days. There's so many choices out there. There's so many brands. There's so many configurations. There's so many price points that it can be really difficult, I think, to know what to get and where to get it. We're going to talk about that, as you said. And I think, the good news about it is that for a student, students tend to have pretty minimalist needs when it comes to a computer. They need to do word processing, they need to do web browsing, they need to check email, they're going to do Facebook and things like that, which all require fairly little horsepower. So depending on what your budget is, I think you can very easily spend $400 or less on a laptop for school, whether it's for middle school or high school or college, and really have all the horsepower that a student is going to need for the basics.
Now, I want to stop you right there before we go any further because you've immediately eliminated desktops. I noticed in the
conversation. Absolutely. A desktop I wouldn't advise a desktop for any student.
I wanted to ask that because sometimes you can get a lot more of the guts, horsepower, and expandability and everything else in a desktop.
Right.
But for students, you're saying that's a no-brainer.
But the only time you would need that kind of horsepower that is, that you would need a desktop instead of a laptop is if you're a big gamer. And those kind of computers, the kids buy themselves. Not many parents.
What parent is going to spend money so their kids can play games?
I have a couple of situations.
And you have to be a big gamer, right?
I have a couple
of
situations.
You can play a lot of games on your notebook.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You have a couple of situations?
I have a couple of situations where there were kids who were going into engineering and CAD/CAM drawing, and a laptop was not sufficient because it did not have a large enough screen. Now, could you hook up an external monitor? Yes.
And for not that much money extra.
Right, exactly. But in this particular case, not only did they need a larger screen, but they needed a better video card than the laptop could offer that was fast enough to do the renderings and stuff that they wanted to do.
So just to keep things straight, I just asked that question, Rick, not to derail you, but so much to say that for people saying, well, why didn't he say desktop? Because generally speaking, when we're talking about high school students, college students coming in, other than somebody going on to higher applications like photo editing or things like that,
well,
laptop is where we're
photo editing.
But I mean, pardon me.
Unless you're doing...
video rather than photo.
Well, it's a mobility issue, really. Yeah, I mean, really. Students are on the go. You know, they're going to be going to the library. Right. Well, no, they may be not going to the library. Does anybody go to the library anymore? But they're going to be moving around. They're going to classrooms and things like that. And so a desktop is just not practical unless, again, it's a middle schooler who's at home and the computer's going to be shared with the rest of the family. But I think, by and large, desktops are kind of on the way out.
A lot of talks about ultrabooks. Mm-hmm. First of all, tell us what an ultrabook is and where does it fit into this conversation?
Sure. An ultrabook is really just a laptop that happens to be extra thin, extra lightweight, and extra expensive.
And a really big target for anybody that wants to steal it. Yeah. Right?
Right.
Yes. You want to make sure that your child has a laptop that it does not stand out.
That's big and ugly, and nobody would buy.
We should mention to our audience, by the way.
You don't take a $1,000 bike to school and then chain it up outside the dorm.
Well,
right?
So then, by that logic, no MacBooks for any students.
Is that right? Disagree.
Well, come on now. I mean, they're beautiful. They are. I mean, if I'm looking to steal...
There's enough of them out there.
There's enough of them. Yeah.
I don't think that they're like it's like taking a super.
But you got to be
bike.
Careful. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
You hang on to them.
That's also the reason why they invented this little device called, and it's real easy, insurance, and also the common sense filter. Don't leave your laptop just laying around. And I don't care whether it's a $1,000 MacBook or it's a $300 PC. You still want to take care of it because those things will grow legs and walk away at any price.
And if your kids would use them, you could buy a lock for them as well, but the kids don't use them. Right?
Well, and since you brought up insurance, Cal, there's actually, whether it's an insurance policy or actually an anti-theft kind of an option, there is such a thing as LoJack for laptops, which could actually be a very good solution for students who are going off to college. Mm. Obviously, the better bet is to lock it down so it can't be stolen, but if it is stolen, you know, this service, which I think is something like 30, 40, 50 bucks a year.
40 bucks, yeah.
Installs and runs silently on your laptop and allows police to actually help you recover your laptop.
Really? Well, like the cars.
And what they do is, it not only is it a GPS and tells the police where to go to get it, just in case the person that first opened it and used it isn't right there, when you open the laptop and you start to use it, it takes a photo of them. Right?
I love it.
So all they have to do is get the laptop, and it's then sent to the police department. Right?
Oh, wow.
Oh, you mean like the old-fashioned Find My Mac that comes automatically in the operating system with the Apple machine? But then again, why pay the money for something like that?
Okay, now hang on, guys. We got a lot to talk about here. As a matter of fact, I got to say this right away, folks. If you click on right in the almost in the middle of our Internet Advisor homepage, that says Rick's Checklist. Now, if you will click on that, what'll happen is it'll pop up a whole list of the things that we're talking about. And then, Rick, you have a link off to a deal at Best Buy, which you think is a particularly good one right now. As a matter of fact, I think.
Right, and keeping in mind with this whole under $400 price point that I'm kind of setting a little arbitrarily, Best Buy has this package on a laptop with a case, a sleeve, a wireless mouse, and a flash drive for $359.99. And this is
an HP computer.
One of the first that I spotted. It's not that it's particular to Best Buy or this, you know, or an HP necessarily. It's just showing you what kind of bang for the buck you can get nowadays.
And to look that there are packages like that out there, especially at some of these big box realtors. I'm going to get a real estate. Pardon me. The outlets,
realtors.
Retailers. That's the word I was looking for.
And I'm my wife came to me and said, you know, I need something for my mother. I'm thinking of going to Micro Center
Another outlet,
yeah.
Which they give, you know, refurbished deals.
Now, right? Refurbished is another angle, another aspect to go to as well. We're not going to talk about that right now because we've got so much going, but that is definitely, matter of fact, you've talked about it, Rick, a number of times on the air here. You get some great deals. They're factory warrantied for a year very often, mm-hmm. and so you got a great computer there. I want to talk about tablets because we've also had those questions, and a lot of people saying, my child's going off to school. These tablets, are they the answer now? What do you think?
That's a tough call, and I wish I was a student myself so I could have an answer to that question, because in the business world, we're starting to ask a lot, can a tablet take the place of a laptop?
Right.
And my answer typically is no, because although there are certain things you can get done, it's just not quite there yet in terms of being able to take the place of a laptop. But for students who might just need to do word processing and email and all that, yeah, you know, a tablet might be more than enough.
Or taking notes.
Taking notes and you know, pair it with a Bluetooth keyboard, which, you know, 50, 60 bucks.
And some of the folders they can... You can get them, you know, have Bluetooth keyboards in them.
Right.
Microsoft, by the way, this fall is going to come out with
the Surface tablet, yes.
Which they say will be the replacement. But, Cal, you were going to say something.
I mean, more and more, I agree with Rick on that situation. You can't replace a laptop with a tablet. But more and more, colleges are starting to come up with different types of schemes and programs that require you to have a laptop and possibly a tablet as well. My sister-in-law is a doctor, and as she was going through school, more and more things like the pharmacy formulations and stuff like that, they're all on Apple applications right on the tablet.
My daughter is an emergency physician with the St. John Hospitals, and she was saying their IT department has created applications specifically for the iPad because it is so portable. As an emergency physician, she's only carrying around that one small lightweight device instead of some huge thing. But
a lot of companies are doing that, specific applications on the iPad, and the iPad's still 80% of the tablet market.
But if
it'll go down,
talking price point right now, mm-hmm. Rick, I think you're saying that laptops are best if you're going to send your child off to school for a computing device. Because still, you're talking about $600 to $800 for a highly equipped or fully equipped iPad, I'm going to guess. Am I right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to something with decent storage.
Well, if you're going to go to full blow, you're going to spend about eight, maybe $900.
So if you add that onto the cost, it's a huge cost, and you could probably get a pretty powerful computer for that. When we come back, let's talk maybe about some software that should go with the computer, and then something like flash drives, and then we're going to talk about printers and also backpacks. Gary had mentioned that, or somebody had mentioned that before. Rick Reuter with us. We're talking about back-to-school gadgets. Hey, by the way, if you have a question for Rick about this, 800-859-0957. Join our conversation now, 800-859-0957. Welcome back to a jam-packed program full of information here. Rick Reuter is in studio with us, our gadget guy from CNET, here for his monthly visit, and we're talking about back-to-school buying. We've been talking about the basics, about getting computers and laptops, and then we mentioned tablets as well, Rick, and you had a few more things you wanted to talk about before we headed back into some other things.
Right. Well, I didn't want to dismiss out of hand that a tablet is a no-go for a student. I really think that it's actually a very attractive option for students because of the convenience, the lightweight. Certainly, you may end up spending a little bit more up front, although there are refurbished iPad 2s out there for, you know, $350, $400. So the point of entry is not that high.
Right.
Well, and with live desktop, you're starting to be able to use a tablet. You can't yet really use it as a replacement, but you're starting to. And as you get to what that does is it gives you the Windows, the Office suite.
Right.
So you get, Word and Excel and PowerPoint.
Well, can't you also
on the pad?
Can't you now get that through the Outlook.com site? You get web apps on, kind of like with Google Docs. You can actually develop documents with an iPad.
Definitely can. There's lots of different ways.
But it's
to do
not going to be the same thing as having it on your computer.
Not quite the same thing.
Not quite as useful.
But getting very close to that.
But what I wanted to mention is that there are certain apps that are available for the iPad and for other tablets that are really outstanding for students.
Yes.
And one I just wanted to showcase is called Audiolio. Audio. And we link to it, that right now?
We're linking to it. It's on our homepage now at theinternetadvisor.net. Audiolio. Yes.
Audiolio. I just like saying it. And it's a basically a recorder, an audio recorder, but it's ideally suited for things like presentations and lectures. So as you listen, you add bookmarks that identify whatever's being discussed at the time. And so instead of having to like kind of scribble notes furiously as you go and inevitably missing out on stuff, you're getting an audio recording of the lecture.
Remarkable.
You're bookmarking as the subject changes or as individual topics come up so that you can easily refer to them later on. It's just an amazing little
app. $3.
And it's $3. And it's just, it's the kind of thing that is, if I had had as a student, would have just...
Oh yeah,
I wouldn't be sitting here right now. I'd be, you know, I'd be working for, you know.
And for what platform is this?
Nah. It's for iOS.
iOS,
but it will only work on your iPad 2 or your iPad 3, but it will not work on your iPad 1 because no microphone.
Oh, that's right. Okay. No, okay. So that's
just
good
to know.
No, it's good to know. That's good to know. But it's there are, and what you're saying, Ricky, is, and this is along the lines of what Gary is saying, we're at the point right now. If we were doing this in 2013, I think we would be having a much different conversation. I think we're talking about back to school then, and next year we will be talking about tablets and very lightweight ones that are fully structured and give you the advantage of being able to use a lot of productivity. Let's keep on moving because we got a lot of stuff. Let's talk about other software, though. Okay, let's say we got the device now. What are some key things that you want to have people think about when they think about software for the student?
Are we talking about for laptops now?
For laptops now.
Gotcha. Okay, well, so the obvious thing for any student is going to be some sort of an office-type suite, which is going to be a word processor, spreadsheet, presentation manager, that sort of thing. And as I discussed, I think, a couple weeks ago when I was here, you know, Microsoft Office is always the default choice for that. Mm-hmm. And it is what a lot of schools require or at least recommend. And unless it's actually a requirement, I definitely urge students and parents who are footing the bill to go out and look for some of the less expensive Microsoft Office compatible options out there. One that I talked about a couple weeks ago was this Kingsoft Office,
right,
which has a terrific free version, a very capable pro version that's mm-hmm. $50. So an office suite is going to be essential, but you really need to find out from your institution what you need.
Although Microsoft gives great student discounts.
That is true. That is actually true.
What is the student version running right now? And that's 119?
No, I think you can get it for her about $50. $50.
Oh, you can get it $50 bucks now. Okay.
So which is an excellent point.
Would that get you at Office 97?
No.
It's actually 2010.
Yeah, 2010.
And 2011 for the Mac. You can get either one for it.
And that gives you that gives you Word, PowerPoint, and Excel. Does it also give you Outlook?
Gives you Outlook.
Yes.
Gives you PowerPoint. Gives you, we could go online.
Word
and
Excel. I believe you have the basic package. You don't get OneNote.
And OneNote,
right,
too,
exactly.
I think.
What I call
and
the big four.
OneNote as well, yeah. Right.
And OneNote. That's great.
So this is, but folks, this is very important. By the way, again, right in the middle of our homepage, internetadvisor.net, I have a little live link to Rick's checklist. And if you go in there, you'll find not only what we're talking about here, but a whole lot more. Let's move on to some of the other peripheral stuff. Flash drives. We've talked about this in the past. How important are they to have?
I think a flash drive is an essential piece of equipment for the student. I mean, it's not the critical make or break of your student experience, but they're so useful for so many different things, whether it's just transporting data from, you know, to the computer lab back to your own computer or what have you, but also for making just quick on-the-fly backups. You know, as a student, you know, you work all night on a paper and then you save it, but you think, oh, God, I need to have, you know, some sort of additional backup to that. And you pop your flash drive in, you make a copy of it to your flash drive, and you're covered. And what's really remarkable to me is that flash drive prices have just dropped in the last couple of months to the point where you can now get an 8 gigabyte flash drive for $5, 16 gigabyte flash drive for $10. It's crazy.
Quick question for you guys. So is every flash drive created equal? Or are there some that are better than others? And I say this because you have your term paper there. You know, if I buy something real cheap for $5, do I risk? I mean, is there a risk of losing it?
I definitely say that if you're going to deal with anything, deal with a more of a name brand product. I mean, the cheap ones will work. How long they will work is another story.
Yeah. Okay. I've never had a problem, and I actually don't buy them. I go to enough conferences where they just give them away.
Get the swag. Yeah. The swag drives.
Yeah, I've had them fall apart physically.
I really have. Yeah, I've lost a few that way.
And it hasn't been that they failed electronically. It's that they physically have broken, you know, and sometimes putting them in and out of the little USB things, they're so flimsily made that they have fallen apart. Yep. And I had one of the rescue drive that did that.
I just gave one to my daughter that's a bracelet.
But Cal, I think I've seen you with, you've had them with pretty sturdy ones, and Ed, I know, carries them, look like they would go through a nuclear war.
Oh yeah, I try to deal with the more rugged ones. I mean, only because I bang them around a lot, and so I'm thinking, let's see, I'm going to give it to someone that's between the age of 16 and 22, and yes, they're going to be very careful with everything they have, including the backpack with the laptop in it that they sling down on the floor when they walk into the door, like it's old textbooks from the old days.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's probably sticking with something a little more rugged in all aspects of what you're going to deal with a student is probably a better way to go.
You know, we've mentioned something about flash drives, the whole things, but how about this too, Rick, the notion of having Dropbox and some of these collaborative sites that people maybe will do papers together on? Can you suggest some of those?
Right. Well, any local backup type of thing you're going to have, a flash drive, an external hard drive, needs to be supplemented with some sort of cloud storage. And I think Dropbox is just a great choice for students. I mean, there are others. There's SugarSync. There's Microsoft's SkyDrive, which are all, you know.
iCloud now, if you happen to be
iCloud, absolutely.
Google has Google, what's it called now? Google Drive? I'm sorry. I thought Google had their own cloud service. I'm sorry. I forget what it.
They do, and I'm.
But it's a free, and it's up to like five.
Cannot think of what it's called.
But you have given us on past programs, you've given us some links, SugarDrive.
Yeah, SugarSync.
SugarSync, right. And it was something else, which are really generous, like up to like 25 gigs, I think, in one case.
Right, right.
But check with your check with the school. Because
very important.
I was just at U of M. I got a little bit of a briefing on why they picked Google Docs to standardize on instead of Microsoft.
You're talking about University of Michigan,
and actually the health systems, the hospital and the med school are still on Microsoft. They haven't yet moved for some other reasons, HIPAA reasons, and some other compliance problems that they experience. But, you know, you take U of M and they have full access to everything Google, and yet they've got a new contract with Box, which is very similar to Dropbox, right?
Exactly.
So they are giving away 50 gig free to every student.
Wow. Cal, you just...
My God.
Wow, what was that?
We got to get video. We got to get video in here to see his face.
This is awesome. This is marketing beyond belief. You know, Rick says, I can't remember what the name of Google's cloud storage is. It's Google Cloud Storage.
No, it's Google Drive. It is Google Drive. I just looked it up.
Oh, how come mine says Google Cloud?
Look at the screen.
No, that's the cloud platform. That's like their enterprise-y solution. I'm looking right here. It's Google Drive. Here, let me show you my iPad.
God,
it's better if you look at an Apple product for what it is. Google Drive.
Store, access, and maintain your data on Google storage infrastructure.
Right, well, infrastructure. That's for businesses.
The bottom line, folks, is when you're having your students go off, they should know about this, and they probably
Google
will
Drive
as well.
Is the
there's a lot of
Rick's right.
There's a lot of other stuff.
You know why that happened. Because he's using a consumer Apple product, and I'm using a business Apple product.
Oh, is that it? Lord. Okay.
Guys, can we get back to the... folks, really, honestly, we got a lot of stuff here. Just quickly,
sorry.
Backpack. A backpack for carrying all this wonderful stuff
around.
Well,
every student needs a good backpack, of course, to schlep all their stuff around. And I have found one that actually kind of serves a dual purpose, not just carrying your stuff, but also powering your stuff. It has a built-in battery, and it has plugs for, you know, your iPhone, your MP3 player, whatever, so it can recharge stuff on the go. It's like extra battery power. It's awesome.
And that's called the
Power Bag.
Power Bag. And again, a link is there inside that where it says Rick's Checklist. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, if we can get them to stop wrestling, we're going to talk about some great deals that Rick has as the cheapskate. Thank you for joining us for a special jam-packed issue of the Internet Advisor, our back-to-school guide with Rick Broida. Obviously, we're not getting to talk about all the things we want to talk about, but we did, Rick put together a wonderful list of things called his checklist, and in there you'll find a lot of the things we've been talking about, including links off to some of the things we've been talking about, the Best Buy computer deal, the special power bag we talked about, etc. Rick, just before we get to your deal of the week, we want to talk a little bit about printers, and as a matter of fact, it's kind of interesting, the conversation that's been going on in studio here, but let's talk about, you got a child going off to school, do they buy a printer?
Well, that's really the question. You know, I was asking, do kids even use print stuff anymore?
Oh, yes.
Okay, you know, you got experience. So, yeah, every college kid, I think, is going to probably need some sort of a printer, unless, as Gary pointed out,
their roommate has one. And, you know, with Lauren, when she went off to college, she says, Dad, I need a printer. And I said, let's wait and see if your roommate has one. Right. We contact her roommate ahead of time. She says, yeah, I'll bring the printer. So Lauren brought the microwave instead. Right?
Because
you don't
good.
Need
yeah,
more than
that,
one printer. In fact, in a dorm room, you couldn't have more than one. There was just not enough room.
Talking about getting off cheap, Baker. You know something, really, with the price of ink for a printer against a microwave, good move. I mean, I won't fight you on that one, but that's a good deal.
They both split the ink, and it was not as good a deal because the printer's dirt cheap. It's the ink that's expensive.
Well, yeah, that ink's a myth.
Rick, but if somebody is going to be buying a printer, what do you think?
Yeah, I think a multifunction is absolutely the way to go. You want something that's going to be able to print and copy and scan. And there's, again, a ton of choices out there. It's kind of hard to know what to pick. I've had really good luck with some of the Brother multifunction printers. You can get cheap third-party ink for them. And I've seen some of the, just recently on the Cheapskate, actually, I wrote up about a Brother multifunction printer that was $50. And with all the features that you need, wireless, everything. And so I would just, you know, shop around a little bit.
And you've got a link, by the way, in your list to that. Okay. Let's talk about your deal of the week, because I want to make sure we get that in. Every time you come here, you got a great deal for, and this one is a wonderful one.
Yeah. Parents, I'm about to make your day. If you are looking for a phone for your student, any age, really, you know, kids are always clamoring for a phone, and especially they want a smartphone. If you don't want to pony up for an iPhone, I don't blame you one bit. But there's a company called Republic Wireless that is doing something really interesting right now. They offer, well, I'm going to tell you the good part first, that they offer service for $19 a month, and that's unlimited calling, texting, data, the works. It's $19 a month. There's no hidden anything. There's no nonsense to it. It's just $19 a month for service. Now, there's a couple small catches with this. Gary, you got something. You don't believe this is possible, do you?
You know, I just hear Metro PCS say, hey, unlimited data, blah, blah, blah. Well, it is. And you actually, it's at a decent speed for the first 250 meg. And then after that, they throttle you back to where it's still unlimited. You just throw it away.
This is different, though. This is much different.
This is a little different. So Republic Wireless is a new they're a startup company. They only offer one phone model, and they actually had one previous to what they're offering now. They just came out with a new model that they are supporting, and it's called the Motorola Defy XT.
And it's Android.
It's an Android-powered phone. It is a fairly decent, you know, it's not the high end.
You've had it in hand. Right?
I do. I brought it with me, and actually, it has a screen that's slightly larger than the current iPhone screen. So it's actually a decent sized screen. It's very thin. It's light. It's a nice phone. I've been playing with it all weekend, and I think, you know, so the phone itself is $249. So it's not, you know, it's not like one of these $99 deals or whatever. But you have to pay a few bucks for the phone, but then you get service for $19 a month.
And by the way, I've seen comparisons that when you buy outside of a plan and you pay upfront like that, you actually spend less money than you do when essentially you're paying it in installment payments over a two-year period.
Absolutely, especially when you're paying, you know, 60, 70, 80 bucks a month. Exactly. Here, there's no contract. So how is it that Republic is able to offer this thing for 19 bucks a month when everybody else is so much higher? Well, they do something that's actually very clever. When it comes to making phone calls, whenever your phone detects a Wi-Fi network, which most of us have in our homes or in our offices or at the local Starbucks, it will use that Wi-Fi network to make the call, just like an app like Skype does. In other words, it's voice over IP calling. And so that's free. That doesn't cost Republic Wireless anything.
Right.
You're using an available Wi-Fi network. So they're basically passing along that savings to you. Now, when you're out and about somewhere and there's no Wi-Fi, well, then you're on the network here, which I think they're a Sprint-powered company.
Yes, they have a decent network that they're
on. So they have a decent, you know, they have the Sprint network backing them up. And, you know, they do, there's no, when I say unlimited, I guess I should qualify that in that if you are too much on the cell towers and not enough Wi-Fi, they'll start to give you warnings.
Yes.
And eventually they may cut you off.
Right. So, because the deal is that you put it onto the Wi-Fi network.
They want to use Wi-Fi as much as possible, which, you know, again, I think is fairly reasonable for most
folks. That's how they keep your costs down.
Exactly.
Okay, again, you'll find that, folks, by going to the internetadvisor.net site. And it's the Republic Wireless $19 a month smartphone. You pay $250 for the phone, but that's once. And then after that, $19 a month. Cal, you have an Internet Advisor takeaway, as a matter of fact, also for today.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny as heck because I was going through Rick's site, and son of a gun, that rascal ran across the same thing as I did. So, you know, maybe I'll just go home and go to sleep. No, I'm just kidding. What I found out there was every now and then I'll have a movie on DVD, and it may be a commercial movie. It may be something I produce myself. And I always wanted to take it around with me either on my iPhone or my iPad. And I have a couple applications that I have paid good money for that allow me to do that sort of thing.
Legally.
Always legal. I came across an offer from Digital. I cannot go to internetadvisor.net. You'll find a link
right there.
Thank you.
Digiarty.
Digiarty.
Yes, I did. And I'm really happy about it.
It doesn't sound right when you say it, does it?
No, not at all. At any rate, that link's on internetadvisor.net.
That's exactly it.
And when you go there, you have an offer both to Windows and Mac people. Hey, we're getting both sides of the fence. You can download an application that will allow you to convert your DVD or your Blu-rays to either the iPhone format or the iPad format so that you can take them with you and be able to look at them anytime you want. And it's a free one. It's normally costs $30, but they're up until about the end of August. You can download it for absolutely free,
yep.
And it's a full function application.
Matter of fact, if you go to the site, you'll see that there are 20 days, 7 hours, 4 minutes, and 46 seconds left on the deal.
It's part of their back-to-school promotion.
Yeah, but again, go to internetadvisor.net, and you'll see the link to that. Guys, quickly, we've been talking about what to buy. Here's a question. Where do you buy it? Do you go into a store? Do you go look for deals online? Let's start with you, Rick.
Well, you know, my thing is always online. I think it's generally going to be less expensive, for things like flash drives and printers and so forth. That being said, and I think we talked about this a while back, that when you're shopping for a laptop, I think it's great to go into a store like a Micro Center or a Best Buy, any store that might be left, and actually get your hands on the laptop so you can see the screen, mm-hmm. you can try out the keyboard, you can try out the touchpad and things like that. And, you know, while you're there, throw them a bone and actually buy it from them. You know,
keep
one of these stores in business.
I would do that with the tablet too, because you're not going to get much of a discount for and I would recommend today an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get much of a discount for an iPad anywhere else, and you might as well go in
unless you get one refurbished.
Unless it's refurbished.
And I think they have some deals. Don't they have Cal for students now? From Apple's opening like $50 off, I think, isn't it, for students?
It's roughly almost $150 off on some Apple products, but yeah, at least $50 off on an iPad and that type of situation. And I agree with both of my cohorts here. When you deal with a device that requires tactile feel, you want to know how the keyboard feels. You want to know how the screen looks. So you want to go look at it. I reverse engineer. I go to the store, do the shopping, and then I go shop out on the net and see if I can find the price that works best for me. Or if I'm in the store with my smartphone, I'll go up and look up the same product on the net and say to the guy in front of me, hey, look, this is the deal they're offering me. You want to sell it to me, or do you want me to go home and buy
Very good.
It?
Spoken
Very good.
Like a true cheapskate.
There we go. There we go.
You got a convert.
Yes. A convert. All right.
Well, folks, you have got one jam-packed podcast to listen to when it comes out. Please go back through it and get all the information. And don't forget to go to internetadvisor.net. And there we have got all the links to these things up there. Folks, we're going to take a pause. And when we come back in our second hour, it's time for you to call in with your questions about your computer, about your iPad, or whatever else it may be at 800-859-0957. Second hour is a call-in hour. That's the time for you to call in with your questions and for us to find some solutions. Again, thanks, Rick Broider, for being here with us and being our Cheapskate Gadget Guy.
Thank you.
And again, 800-859-0957. Cal, Gary, and I will be back to answer your questions after a short break.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you for joining us for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker and Cal Carson are in studio with me to hear, answer your questions about problems you may be having with your computer, getting online, downloading a browser that won't work anymore, whatever it may be. We've got people who can answer Windows questions and Apple questions, you name it. Fruits or Windows, we got it. And the number is 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0957. Welcome back. It's hour number two. That's your hour. What do I mean when I say that? Well, the first hour of our program, the Internet Advisor, Gary and I and our crew of experts like Cal Carson, who's in studio with me today as well, we bring you all sorts of content in that first hour. Try to jam-pack it full, and if you go to internetadvisor.net, our website, our homepage, you'll find all that information there. By the way, we also have a Facebook page, which has a lot of news items and things like that that we put in there throughout the week. And great way of interacting as well with the group here on the air. And then the second hour, though, is yours. And by that, I mean, this is the time we want you to give us a call during our live program at 800-859-0957. And we will tackle some of the questions that you've got on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, the nice thing about it is that as we're helping you with your questions and concerns, it may seem like a very simple one. Please don't worry about that, because it helps a whole lot of other people. And really, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. Okay, having said that, again, the number is 800-859-0957. We got some folks lined up, and we're going to get to them in just a second. But first, Mr. Eric Anderson is here, and he has the Mac Minute, his look at Mac news and rumors, and they are just about the same thing.
This week on the Mac Minute, new iMac specs, new dot connectors, and cheap iPhones. Could Apple be looking to eliminate optical drives? That's what some Apple insiders are speculating. The rumor originates from new Apple Boot Camp code that would allow the computer to boot Windows 7 from a USB drive. The code includes two iMac models which have yet to be released. A Chinese website has posted photos of a smaller dot connector which could be used on the new iPhone 5. The connector appears to be similar to a MagSafe power adapter. It connects to a dock port from either direction and also quick releases if pulled. Finally this week, if you're looking for a good deal on a new iPhone, check the Apple Store. Now I know that's already common sense, but there's another reason why. Apple has instructed its retail stores to match discounts already being offered by retailers such as Radio Shack and Best Buy. Selected versions of the iPhone 4 and 4S can now be purchased for roughly $50 less than advertised. For the Internet Advisor, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
Thank you very much, Eric. We kid a lot about that, about Mac news and rumors being the same thing, but it's true. Big fall season coming up, guys. We're just, matter of fact, probably about 30 days away exactly, I think, almost, to the release of, let's see, September 12th. That is the date, am I right, Cal, that they're talking about releasing the Apple products?
Alleged.
Alleged.
Oh,
yeah,
you never
alleged.
Know, right? You never know. They've said that a few times. People thought it was August 7th.
Yeah. But it's going to be, allegedly, we're going to be hearing about a new iPhone, possibly maybe the mini iPad. And then in addition to that, Microsoft will be also releasing big stuff coming up in October, I believe.
Right. October, and they're 26th. Not as secretive.
No.
They don't generate the buzz that that Apple does with their releases, their announcements.
But, you know, it is time for Microsoft to come out with something really spectacular, because they've been kind of like, you know, your meat and potatoes in the background. It'd be nice to have them come up front with a little spice.
I think it's going to be spectacular. Personally, I'm a little fed up with a lot of the niff-knowing that's going on.
Yeah, we see it. So.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right, guys, let's get right to our phone lines, because folks are lined up here ready, and say hello to Frank from Romeo. Frank, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, gentlemen. I enjoy your show.
Good.
Hey,
thank you. What can you do with a used laptop? Is there any charities you can give it to? I've got a nice Dell unit. I just got a brand new machine, and this works fine, but don't really know what to do with it. I'd like to give it to a charity.
So do you live in Romeo, Michigan? Is that... Is
well,
right?
right near Romeo. I live in Washington, but nobody knows Washington, so
well,
I pretty
oh, no, I do.
Romeo. Yeah, we do.
The Peach Festival, yeah.
Yeah.
So in Romeo, there's a Super Family Thrift Store and Donation Center.
Oh, okay.
It's right there on Van Dyke.
Oh, cool.
So you can go there and donate it there. Now, we know a couple people personally. Foster, right?
Yeah, I was going to say Global Tech Ministries. Steve Becker is an old friend of ours, been on the show with us a number of times. They refurb these laptops and desktops. They'll take pretty much anything. Then they send them on to nonprofit organizations, both in the United States and around the world, particularly religious organizations, missionaries. They have a great licenses from Microsoft that helps them to be able to send it on to these folks fully equipped. It gets all your information off of it, so you don't have to worry about that being sent on. And I will try to put that link up online, but generally it's Global Tech Ministries.
And okay, great.
I'm trying to find that, but that they're a great source. They're great people. What's some other things, guys?
And actually, what you can do is go to your favorite search engine, go to Google or whichever, Bing or whatever, and type in donate used electronics or used computer if you're in Romeo, if you're in some other location, and you'll see that there's probably a number of places you can donate or recycle.
Okay. Very good.
All right.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Great question. Yeah, with people getting new devices and new machines.
Just be careful that you need to make sure that all of your personal information is off of your hard drive, and it's not a matter of just deleting it, because it still can be obtained.
Let's talk about that for just a second. Maybe, Cal, you can chime in on this, too. How would you make sure that all your stuff is gone? I mean, do you go through, like, a special software package that does that?
The way that I normally do it is if someone says, hey, I want this wiped out so it's nice and clean, that sort of thing, is I will normally go to Derek's Boot and Nuke. Is a free download.
Derek, am I right?
Dariks.
Okay. Derek's.
And the product is called Boot and Nuke. And it's a free download. And what it is, you can download it and burn it right to a CD, and it will wipe your drive completely clean up to the Department of Defense standards.
Okay. So it really scrubs it thoroughly, like a number of passes that it goes over.
Yep.
It take a little while to do that, but you can be sure then, as sure as possible, that within reason, that what you're giving is going to be something where your information is not there. That's a very important thing to take into consideration as well. Great. Joe from Shelby Township will be with you in just a moment at 800-859-0957. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. We are in our second hour, which is the hour in which we ask you folks to give us a call and see if we can give you a hand with your concerns. And so the number is 800-859-0957. Heading back out to, let's talk with Joe, who's with us from Shelby Township. And Joe, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Oh, I see you're interested in something called CCleaner.
First of all, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
When I routinely go into my laptop and I use both Disk Cleanup and CC Cleaner, and generally do a good job. I'm running Internet Explorer 9. I have been ever since it came out. But the problem I'm having is that if I just use Disk Cleanup, I don't have any problems. But whenever I run CC Cleaner and then I do a restart, what it's doing, it's selectively removing items from my favorites bar. And it's always the same ones, and it's not all of them. It's only about maybe a third of them. But it only does it when I run CC Cleaner.
And when you say you routinely do that, I mean, how often do you run CC Cleaner?
Maybe once a month, once every 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I mean, that's about as often as you should. Mm. I run it only when I have problems.
Yeah, me too.
I would never run it on a routine basis, just because some people think that they have to keep everything neat and tidy on their computer.
Yeah,
and
with 500 gig hard drives,
it's a great opportunity to go do a lot of maintenance on your computer from trying to keep it clean. So I just let mine roll unless I have a problem, and then you have to use CC Cleaner. C Cleaner is great.
Joe, do you have an older? Do you have an older computer with a smaller hard drive? Is that what concerns you?
No. This is less than 2 years old. I had it specially built. I specified everything on it, and this problem has just recently cropped up, probably in the last 3 or 4 months. It never used to do it before.
Yeah.
It doesn't remove them from the favorites list. It only removes them from the favorites bar.
I see.
Is this a new version that you downloaded, maybe upgraded to recently?
I just I went to use it and it says there's a newer version.
Yeah,
available.
Almost just about every time you open up CCleaner, it's got a new version.
Okay,
yeah.
Because
and it might be that what the new version fixes this problem, right? Because it shouldn't happen, as you know, Joe. Yeah.
CCleaner is customizable. I don't use it, so I don't know that much about it. But according to what I'm reading on the net, it is customizable.
It is.
And if you go in there and tell it not to do that, it'll stop doing it.
Well, I did. I've unchecked the boxes that deal with favorites and history and all of that, and it still does it.
Well, I have another suggestion for it, and it's not really dealing directly with your problem. I use something called Glary Utilities on my wife's computer, the Windows one there. And I don't, by the way, don't regularly clean with it, but occasionally I'll go in there every couple months, and I'll do that with hers. And Glary Utilities actually was recommended to us. It's free. It's Glary Utilities, and it's free, and you can obviously buy a pro version of it, but the free one works. It does the same thing. It does a cleanup, et cetera. Just be very careful, because some of these things also include some registry cleanup that you have to be careful with, because you can mess yourself up with some of those things. But
okay.
I found that works even better than CCleaner.
okay, well, I'll go ahead and give that a try and see what happens.
Yeah, because it sounds like CCleaner is messing up for you.
Yeah, it shouldn't do that, obviously. No. So you might want to download the latest version of CCleaner and see if that fixes the problem, because they may have said, oh, you know what, we have a problem. We've heard this from other people. They've come out with a fix, because that it shouldn't do that, as you know.
And then the other one is Glary Utilities, G as in George, L-A-R-Y, Utilities, another free one. Thanks for giving us a call. Hope that works for you.
And for everybody else, you don't feel you have to go in and do this all the time.
I was going to ask about
that. It gives you an opportunity to just mess up your computer. I know a lot of people, they install stuff, they uninstall stuff, they uninstall stuff. Well, all that leaves little bits of code in the registry.
Right.
And sooner or later, you're going to have a problem. And then you'll use CCleaner to clean it up. But if you don't need to remove something, leave it alone.
What do we use on the Mac? I'm trying to think of now, because I don't use it that often.
Some people use something called Mac Keeper.
I had that. That hogged resources horribly.
Yeah, the best thing I think that might be good to use that doesn't chew up resources would be Onyx. Onyx is a good tool.
O-N-Y-X, right, free as well.
Yeah, it's a great tool, and it's been around for some years, and it's been pretty reliable for cleaning.
And does kind of the same thing, but again, I use it only if I have a problem someplace, and often with a Mac, it's fixing your preferences.
And I notice, this is just me, but I notice a lot of people who are getting toward what I call end of life on a Windows machine will generally start to use these type of tools, trying to get more life out of the machine. And really, it's just a warning letting them know it's probably about time to step up to a new machine.
And it's also, you know, we also have bad habits I think we carry along, Gary. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this. In the older days, when we had a very small hard drive, I remember fighting.
Well, you'd have to.
You had a 10 gigabyte hard drive. You were constantly fighting because the software was expanding all the time, and you had this hard drive that was pretty expensive to replace, and so you were constantly cleaning up. That's not really the case much anymore with these bigger hard drives, and I think they're far more efficient machines as well. Okay, let's get back out to our phones again, 800-859-0957. And Sandy from Grand Ledge, glad to have you here with us. And how may we help you with your painting?
Well, I do some paintings for booths and for selling, and I would like to make very high but not expensive prints that I can do at home to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are oils.
Okay.
Some of them are watercolors.
So you do this you're an artist, you do these by hand. You paint oils and you paint watercolors.
Correct.
You want to get the best possible image of these and then sell those images as well, right?
Right.
Okay. Any suggestions, guys?
Now, these images are going to be online and you're going to leave them online? Or are you going to print them out?
I paint originals, take pictures of them, and then would like to make copies.
Okay, and you mean physical copies, right?
Correct.
Yeah, one big prints of it. Okay.
So it has very little to do with the computer, and it'll have to do with your printer. That'll be that'll be the constraint, right?
So, and also also the camera that you take the picture with, obviously.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you want, as high a pixel count as you can get, so an 8 or 12 possibly, depending on how large print you want. But, you know, again, you're going to have, the expensive part will be the printer, you may actually end up wanting to take that somewhere where get it.
Yeah.
You know, you'll pay for the prints, but you can go to a copy center and take your USB photo, the photos on the USB, and then try printing them from there.
Right, Kel?
What I probably would suggest to you is, because you're going to paint an oil picture, and you're going to want this picture, the resolution, to be the best possible that you can get off of it, because you want it to reflect the quality of the print that you did, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Let me say this up front, and with all due respect to you, you're not going to do a good job doing it cheap. You're going to have to do a good job using a good printer. A good printer would be something toward a dye sublimation printer. You're going to be up in $1,000. Now, the other thing that I can tell you that might work better is look into something like Shutterfly, where you can take and shoot the picture, have it electronically, transmit it over the internet to them. they'll print it off on those really nice printers that they have. Mm. And because they print at bulk, they'll charge you a lot less. For example, a 20 by 30 print is only $22. And then they'll mail it right back to you. And I think you'll be better off with that quality.
Do you understand that process?
So that'll be
Sandy?
A little cheaper than your Kinko's, which will have the same kind of equipment, maybe.
Right, possibly.
Depending on
But Shutterfly, that's an excellent service. So essentially, Sandy, what you do is make sure you get a good digital image. And again, as Gary said before, you want to get as high a resolution, as many pixels as possible in that image. And then send that to a place like Shutterfly where they can do that kind of printing for you, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much, and good luck with that project. That's a great question.
Yeah, lighting's so important when you do that. Yeah.
So you want to make sure that you're taking a good picture to start with.
That's right.
And then you have services like Shutterfly, an excellent one, Cal. Hey, back in just a minute, we'll be talking with John about a new iPad. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Cal Carson in studio. And Cal, I think this first question we have lined up here with John from Akron, Ohio, is right up your alley. He has a question about a new iPad that he's got there. How you doing, John?
I'm doing fine. Good evening to everyone there.
Sure.
This is probably going to sound like sacrilege on this program, but first of all, I'm going to preface everything by saying I'm not fond of computers. But anyway,
by the way,
there are times that I'm not either.
Anybody who uses computers for any length of time will say amen.
But anyway, I received from very loving family members an iPad for my birthday.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
and And I did have a prior to that, I still have a laptop that I've had for about 2009. I think is when we christened the thing or whatever.
Sure.
But anyway, I was able to look at videos using my same modem and wireless system that I have in my home mm-hmm. with the laptop mm-hmm. and seemingly going through videos without any hitch. But with the iPad, it seems to be going real slow. So I guess my question, and mm-hmm. not seems to, it is going real slow.
Okay.
And like a 2 or 3 minute video will take me about 15 minutes to download, so there's no breaks in it, you know. So
It's not buffering then, or
it is buffering.
Oh, it's buffering. Pardon me.
It's buffering.
It doesn't do that on your laptop. Okay.
Pardon.
But it doesn't do that on your laptop.
No, it hasn't. Now I haven't. My laptop has got a serious virus, and I need something done with that. So of recently, I haven't really looked. At the Toshiba laptop, but anyway. Could it be my modem, or is there – somebody said at AT&T that possibly an iPad uses more of that speed up or something in the modem. It takes more of speed to get that to work quickly on an iPad versus laptop.
That sounds like voodoo. That's okay. Cal?
Let's back up and start from the beginning. Your family was very loving to you and gave you this iPad. Does this iPad have a cellular modem in it, or is it strictly a wireless?
I don't know what you mean by a cellular.
Do you pay a fee to a wireless company like a Verizon or AT&T or somebody like that? Sprint?
It has to be. Well, I can go to any hotspot and use it.
Oh, okay,
right.
Works on Wi-Fi. Okay,
all right. And so, if you have your computer sitting in front of you, and you have your iPad sitting in front of you, and you both connect to that hotspot, and you start downloading the same YouTube video, you're saying it's jerky on your iPad, and on the laptop, it's fine.
That would be a good description. I don't have them real-time compare. I don't have them on.
That's okay, but you said to us before, John, and I think we'll just leave it at that, that you saw a difference, a big difference in the delivery.
Yeah,
What I'm going to suggest that you do is go find your wireless router, and I want you to reboot that router. Basically, turn it off, let it sit for about a minute, and turn it back on.
I've done that.
Okay. And then what I want you to do is go back to your iPad, and I want you to turn off the wireless services on that. And then turn it back on.
Do you know how to do that?
I didn't let you finish. Okay.
Now, do you know how to do that on your iPad?
No, not really.
On your iPad, there's a little thing that looks like a gearbox. Among those icons, when you first go to the homepage, click in that gearbox, which is your settings. It'll show up
Yeah, yeah,
near the top. near the top, you'll see, I think, second or third listing is Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
If you click on that, you can turn it off right there. Just slide the little talk
there. Okay.
And then turn it back on.
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'll try that. I haven't
then
tried
it. What it does is it will look for your modem again, your Wi-Fi, and make sure you choose, if you're in an area where you have a number of different Wi-Fi signals, make sure you're getting your Wi-Fi signal.
Okay. Is it possible that in the interim that I haven't used that laptop much, that something may have happened to the modem that is causing this issue?
It could be
the router, as mm-hmm. you call it.
Yeah,
it could be very possible there could be something wrong with your router. Also, the other thing you might want to reset as well is your router's connected to the modem coming either from your cable provider or whoever you're getting your internet from. You're going to want to reset that as well.
And just as a rule of thumb, John, the way to do is this. You unplug them like you unplug from the computer, then you unplug from the router, then you unplug from the cable modem, okay? And then let them sit for a few moments, for say 60 seconds, and then you go backwards. You plug in the cable modem first, then you plug and make sure that its lights are all on and it's working. Then you go over and you plug it into the wireless router, make sure that all the lights are working, and then you put it in, and then you try to connect to it wirelessly.
Yeah, I'm having difficulty separating the cable. Well, it's not a cable; it's a plug-in thing. I don't have cable.
Well, how do you get your internet service to your house?
It's through AT&T Wireless, and I plug in a what I think is called a router, which I think you're referring to.
So you have a single unit. Is it a single unit with a little like mast on it?
No, what he has is an AT&T router. It looks like it's about an inch thick. It stands up on the end, and it's gray in color.
Or beige or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's got a landline coming out of it.
Right.
And,
you're just going to pull the power cord off the back. It's that black one that goes to that AC adapter and reboot it.
That's how you do it.
And then that way you'll reboot it. Now, here's the one last test to tell whether or not it's the router. If you take that iPad down and go over to your Starbucks or your McDonald's and fire up the Wi-Fi, do you still get jerky YouTube video there?
I haven't really had the thing out of the house.
Then that's the test. Matter of fact, that would be one of your first tests to make sure
I was thinking about I should try that.
See, yeah, that's a basic one. Go to someplace free where you can get a hookup and try it out there, John.
Can I ask one more quick question?
Go ahead. Make it quick, and I might have to answer. Go ahead.
The iPad won't let me use Adobe Flash Player. Is there something to download that? Is there something else I can use?
Unfortunately, on the iPad, not
And the
right
iPad
now.
Says no. You know, they will not allow Flash.
So I'm out of luck if I need an iPad.
We all are.
Yeah, everybody is.
Okay.
iPads, unfortunately, they don't allow you to use Flash. But try that. Just simple experiment. Take your iPad to some place where you get a free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and an iPad is not as powerful as a computer. It's not. Right. So,
but even in this case, he should be able to stream YouTube pretty
easily.
You
think he could.
All right, let's go to Don from Troy, and welcome to the Internet Advisor. Don, how can we help you?
Well, we hired an outfit down in Texas to develop a website for us, and it's a beautiful website, but we had trouble communicating with them to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
Then recently, somebody called us and said, your website has been hijacked, and there was an image on there. It looked like a terrorist with a gun and it looked like a Turkish flag, and it said, you have been hacked, and it gave an email to contact, and I was afraid to do that.
Yeah.
So then we found out that we have a hosting service that I think was Timedyne or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We called them, and they had their security people look at it, and they immediately took that hijack or hack guy thing off. But they said we had to work through the people who developed the website for us. We can't communicate with them. They have a phone number you call, and all you get is voicemail. We send them emails. I've had a third party contact them.
Oh, my word.
We need to get control of our website.
Absolutely.
Any suggestions?
Do you know what it was built in? Do you know if it was built using a CMS like WordPress or Joomla or...
No, I don't know. I'm not knowledgeable enough to know
your hosting...
It's a great website. We get, people say, wow, what a website. We make parts for antique cars.
Sure.
And it's got movement in there, and it's a fancy website. We've had it a number of years.
But if you can't get the people that you're paying good money to to take care of you.
So go to someplace else.
Go someplace else.
So
you know,
now
we can't get control of our website. So, our website, we can't get it.
Okay.
So what you do, go to your hosting provider and see if they can tell what it's been done in. If it's just straight HTML, which it probably is not, or if there is some sort of CMS, like a Drupal or a WordPress. Those are the free ones. Joomla are the big three of the free ones, but there are lots of others as well. Otherwise, you can contact a web development company in Troy. We have a really good one, VC Web Design, on the bottom of our homepage. Vince could help you with that. But there's a number of people that could go in, take a look at it, and they'll probably be able to help you out.
You know, the other suggestion...
Any good company will be able to help you out.
And Don, I would suggest this. If you know other people who are in your same business, find out what works for them and find out what company is working. But we have some excellent ones here that Gary said, for instance, Vince, who does our web page, has VC Web Design. If you go to the bottom of our page, internetadvisor.net, you'll find a link to them right there. And I'm afraid that may be the best advice we can give you, is to go to another company and see
internetadvisor.net.
And then right at the very bottom, you'll see the link for VC Web Design. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Another quick break, and we come back, we'll take more of your calls here at the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown here, along with Gary Baker and Kel Carson in studio. And Gary, you had a quick rejoinder for a question from John. He has a web page. It's not working. As a matter of fact, it got hijacked, and he can't get any help from the people who built it for him. They won't answer his calls or anything. If you find yourself in that situation, you had a quick suggestion for people.
You have two relationships. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. In his case, they were different. He could get a hold of the hosting firm who helped him just take it down, but they need a help from the developer. So there are a lot of developers out there. They'll develop the site. They don't care where they host it or where you want to host it.
The host is the one who puts it up on the internet.
It's on their servers, their data center.
On their machines, right? And their data center.
So is the hosting relationship is way more important, because if something happens to the developer, you just get a different developer, right? You can still have access to the website,
the
code that drives the website from the hoster, because it's on the hosting machine.
So the hoster can actually give you that whole package of code, hand it to you and say, here, take this to another developer.
Or give them the password and let them come in and develop right on
the
system.
They could
just
do it themselves. Okay, good.
So,
I wanted to clarify that for John.
That's the important part. So make sure it's... Now, there's a lot of companies. Foursquare is one of them, but there are many others. They're doing both. If something happens to Foursquare, not much you can do about it.
That is a hoster and a developer.
If something happens to your hoster, that's the problem.
Okay, that's key. All right,
so
John.
So the hosting firm is important.
Just as a follow-up, so you could get them to zip that whole package of code up, send it to you, or they could do it for you, whichever you care to do.
Or they can let another developer do it right on that particular server.
Okay.
Right? So that you don't have to move hosting companies. You can let another developer come in.
You can go right in there and do it on that.
You've got to pick a different developer.
By the way, I want to thank Annie Nichols again for being the sweet lady of the phones there for us, and Rich Lozinski for spinning the dials. Thank you so much for helping us. And don't forget, internetadvisor.net is our homepage where you find a wealth of information, including our podcast, and also we have a Facebook page at Internet Advisor for the Internet Advisor, and check that as well. All right, let's go to David from Maumee, Ohio. Dave, you got an old Dell. It's got some problems. Yeah, hi.
Hey, David.
Hi. First of all, I am not computer savvy. I have a Dell computer. It's probably 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
And every few months, a fan in the computer would get real loud.
Mm-hmm.
I would take the cover off and use a toothpick and a vacuum cleaner and clean the fins out behind the fan.
Okay, good idea. Okay.
And then it would work fine for a couple more months, and then I'd have to do it again.
Right.
Well, about a month ago, it started getting really loud. I went in there, cleaned it as usual, and it hasn't changed it. And it gets real loud.
Yeah. I think it sounds like the bearings are going on the fan.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Sorry. So in other words, mechanically, you can clean it just so often, and then eventually what's going to happen is the bearings in it go, and it starts wobbling, and essentially the fans die. Those are modular, aren't they, guys?
Yeah, you just go buy a new fan for it.
If you can find
I'm sorry. It spins real, it just spins real fast, and it sounds like a blow dryer.
Well, now that could be a couple of things going on there. I mean, if it's spinning constantly, then you may have another problem. Something's overheating.
Yeah,
and it could be a software problem that could be causing that.
It could be, but probably it's you know, there's the intake is having trouble getting enough air.
When you open it up to clean the fan, do you clean other parts as well?
No.
Okay, then temperature is definitely the issue.
Yeah.
What's happening is that even though the fan tries to pull more air in, mm-hmm. or the computer tells the fan to spin faster to pull more air in to try and lower the temperature. So you need not only to clear out the back where that fan is, but you have to clear in the front where the air comes into the computer.
Good point. Very good point. Yeah, you got okay. two components to your fan. The fan has got to be able to breathe, and essentially it's going, I can't get enough air. And that's part of what's happening, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, Dave. Thanks. And so, by the way, with an older machine like that, you probably can service that yourself.
Right.
But
they're probably cheap.
Yeah.
So you can go buy one if you need it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you can take like a vacuum cleaner, and if it has like that little brush attachment, just go across every possible opening all the way around the machine, and that'll help to suck all the dirt out.
That's right.
All right.
And you should do that periodically.
Yeah, exactly. With laptops in particular, you kind of forget that they need the servicing as well as like a desktop can get full of cat hair and dust bunnies and things
and
like that.
You use condensed air. You can blow it out too. Just be careful.
Now, one of the things I heard about, by the way, in service, I think Ed, he would say this too, you have to be careful about spraying that condensed air directly in the fan. Because you can actually burn the bearings out when you're doing
Gotta be careful.
Yeah, it'll go.
Yeah, exactly.
Voice of experience.
We have all done it, I think, probably.
I think so.
All right, Keith from Livonia, welcome to the Internet Advisor. You got a question about some Windows 7 videos that are not going the right way.
Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Good. My daughter sends us videos of my grandson,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, turn sideways.
I already know your answer.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
She says she sends it from her phone, and everybody else gets it okay, but I don't know why I'm getting it sideways, and it's really a pain to turn the thing upside. You know,
you got a crink. Get a crink in your neck.
Yeah, you're not kidding. But anyways, I was wondering if I went on and tried to look to see if I could do it from landscape to portrait or whatever, and it won't let me do anything. So I don't know. Okay. I call you experts.
There you go. Cal, you had a thought?
I'm almost positive of the fact that you're getting it sideways because she's shooting it sideways. See, unlike all other recording devices, with telephones, if you don't shoot in the mode that you want it to be presented, it's going to come out sideways. In other words, if you're shooting something and you really want it to be landscape, you need to turn the phone landscape in order to shoot it. If you have it where most people do, they're holding it straight up, mm-hmm. and they got it in portrait mode. And then when you get it, your machine looks at it and says, oh, it should be this way. And it presents to you in a portrait mode instead of landscape mode. So it always looks sideways.
Now, he says, however, other people are getting
that's
these.
That's exactly what I told her. And she says all the other ones that she sends it to is correct, the way, mm-hmm. you know, the way it looks as she sends it. She says, I'm the only one that has it sideways.
Keith, did this start happening suddenly at some point?
No, it's every time she sends something,
it's
sideways. But
and what
computers now, when she sends a still picture, it's perfect. You know, it's the
okay,
right way.
Okay, this is just the videos.
But just video.
All right, so what on your computer, what operating system are you
Windows
using?
Windows 7, right?
It's a 7.
Okay,
uh-huh.
and 7. You're using Windows Media Player to play that movie?
Well, all I know is I have Yahoo, and she sends it through that. I open it up through Yahoo, and it says open, you know, and...
one of the things you might try doing is right-clicking on the image, and then you'll get a drop-down that says open with.
Right.
And then I would say open with Windows Media Player.
Well, it says open, save, or cancel. Open, save, or cancel.
Shouldn't he be
on the bottom yellow line, Mike?
Okay,
it'll
in that
say,
case,
open, save or cancel.
In that case, then save it, give it a name
yes.
like my grandson's
whatever.
First
right.
baseball,
right. Okay.
And then do file open and then do go to start and start Windows Media Player, mm-hmm. and then open that file, and I bet you it'll play correctly.
Or even open with. I bet a right click would give
yep.
you a drop down for open with. So in other words, save it. And
so
then,
I need to go through Media Player, is what you're saying.
We're thinking
that's one of the things you could do. You could always use a different video player, but have you upgraded your Windows Media Player to the most current version?
No, I'm not too sharp on that stuff, but
I have
Adobe thing. So when it comes out and it says update. I do the update.
Well, then that's a little different. Well, we're talking about you do regular Windows updates, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, then you should be getting the regular window updates, the media player, I'm guessing, as
yeah,
well.
Hopefully.
You
hopefully.
Should. But what we're suggesting is a workaround for you. Don't try to play it in your Yahoo Mail. Save it and then play it with your Windows Media Player, okay?
Okay.
All right, Keith, take a crack at that and see if that helps. Folks, thank you so much for joining us. And Gary and Cal, thank you so much for being here and for doing a great job on the show. Cal, as always, good having you around.
The fastest 2 hours in radio.
I think it is. My name is Foster Brown. Again, thanks to all the crew making this happen, Andy Nichols and Rich Lazinski and everyone else who does this. Don't forget, we're going to be, within about 24 hours, we'll post the podcast of this show up, and you can take some time to listen to the elements that Rick Broida had in that first hour where we talked about the back-to-school specials. Lots of great Reese's horses for you. Resources in English at internetadvisor.net, and look for all the information we have in our show notes there. Visit us on our Internet Advisor Facebook page as well. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.